How y'all doing today?
All right.
Y'all sure?
Yeah.
I first want to say that I'm in the habit of I've been sharing for a while. I'm traveling around this country, and every time I have the opportunity and the privilege to share the men's rap, I'm always amazed at why would God call me to share the men's rap. I think that it should be another name for the gathering of men. I think it should be the boys' rap. Because any man that stands behind or gets the commitment to share with other men, there's a reason why we come here, because we struggle with stuff. Any person that gets the opportunity to share with men is really talking about the issues of little boys. And I don't know why. You know, I know that I'm 58 years old, and being 58 years old, when you stand up and I gaze this whole thing, I know I probably could step up that way, but it's better to walk around and come out this way. You don't think about stuff like that until you get a little older. I probably could do it, but the possibility of getting hurt rises. And I said, man, let me, you know, and my mind was telling me to do it. But I realized that it was the little boy telling me to do it. He always trying to recapture something. He was just like, jump up there. But by the grace of God, the mature me got the message. And the mature me said, you don't want your wife to have to go to the hospital in Baltimore to get you. So walk up. I want to say that every time I get the opportunity to share the men's rap, one thing grabs hold of me. And I don't mean to make this a pamphlet meeting. I just mean to tell you where I'm referencing the little boy from. In the triangle self-obsession, it gives us a picture of how people are normally raised, how you come into the world, you're a little baby, you don't know no better. When you scream and holler, we assist you, we go to you. You are the center of our universe. Then it talks about the process of coming out of that total self-centeredness and realizing that people outside of you can help you. Then it goes to another part of the process that says, hey, listen, and coming outside of you can help you. Then we transition to believing that a power greater than ourselves could help us, and we naturally grow up. So when it comes down to addicts, I don't know about y'all, but when it comes down to me, I seem to falter along the way. I didn't make that transition well to maturity. I hesitated in that transition process. I dragged my feet in that process. I delayed and stalled and got cold feet, and I changed my mind about growing up. And the literature goes on to say, and we seem to never outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. And I'm telling you that this process, this whole process that I've been in, my friend, God rest his soul, Darryl C, used to say, it's a hell of a thing to be grown and have to grow up. And you can mask it with whatever you want to mask it with, Martin, but your immaturity and the juvenile delinquent that sit at the seat of your emotions, he will show up. And he shows up, and the place that he shows up the worst is in relationships. The juvenile delinquent. I'm talking about, y'all know y'all spiritual, y'all, you know, came up. I'm talking about me. The juvenile delinquent shows up. Every time my wife tells me something I don't want to hear, my mind understands what she's saying. And sometimes I even know she's right. But the juvenile delinquent that sits at the seat of my emotions, he goes through all kinds of stuff. And I'm telling you that every relationship that I've been in that failed, I can trace it to the juvenile delinquent. I can trace it to my inability to just never outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. See, a child wants what he wants, and he wants it right now. Matter of fact, a child wants what he wants, and if you don't give it to him, he'll have a hissy fit. But it don't look appropriate for a grown man at 58 years old to be having hissy fits. So what I do is have an emotional fit inside of me, and I never tell you. I told you, I don't know why they call this the men's rap. Because really what we're talking about a group of people that, according to the literature, faltered along the way. And they seem to never be able to outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. And I'm telling you that some of the stuff that goes on in my mind and some of the struggles that I deal with is all because when I look back at it, it's never outgrowing the self-centeredness of a child. I think about the steps and how the steps causes me to go back and rescue the little boy that I abandoned because I didn't like how he responded to life. As a child, I thought God made a mistake. In my mind, I was like, why would my life be so difficult? Why would stuff bother me that don't bother nobody else? And I looked outside of my house, and I was afraid to really be able. I just didn't have a capacity to deal with my reality. And my reality was this. My mother had me at 16, and she decided to get married to a person that wasn't my dad. And then they had children, and they lived in walking distance from me, who I stayed with my grandmother and grandfather, and my whole family conspired to tell me that was my dad, but I didn't have any connection with him. And I come from this era. This is the era that I come from. I come from kids that'll be seen. Y'all come from another area. Kids that'll be seen and not heard. What goes on in this house? You tell anybody that went on, the stuff that went on in this house, you're getting in trouble. And it wasn't a space for me to come and express the fact that I was confused and hurt by my living conditions. And nobody would tell me the truth. It was a conspiracy to keep me locked into a lie that wasn't working for me. And I looked outside. And I noticed these people in my neighborhood that was getting attention that I thought I wanted. It was three individuals in particular. They all passed away, so I can say their names. It was Earl Dix, J.D., and Snake. Earl Dix, J.D., and Snake. And Snake was the gangster. Snake was the one that nobody messed with. And Earl Dix is the one that had all the money and he had all the drugs in the neighborhood. And J.D. was the pimp. He had every lady that you wanted to have. And I took a little bit of Earl Dix and a little bit of J.D. and a little bit of Snake, and I invented this person because my reality was too painful for me. And I went through my life with a robot that I invented because I wanted him to handle the life that I didn't think that I had the capacity to handle. And then I had to create another person to protect the person that I created. Then I got to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, and Narcotics Anonymous started to tell me stuff to do that I never even heard of before. See, Narcotics Anonymous told me everything that went on in the house, you got to talk about it now. But you didn't know how hard it was to get over the belief that everything went on in the house that you can't talk about it. You didn't know what I was struggling with because my parents, my grandparents brought me up. They brought me up with this kind of discipline. I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out. So I had a false belief system. And then I had a fear factor that backed up the false belief system that told me that I bet not tell nobody. Then I get here and y'all was freely telling everybody, but I don't know how to tell nobody. And the guy that I created, he's running around getting into these superficial, plastic, phony, non-substance relationships. The little boy is at the seat of the emotions. I get into my step work, and the step work tells me, go back and nurture the little boy. And I'm honest. obsessed with this thing because I was telling the God of my understanding, how do you want me to go back and nourish somebody with the truth and nourish somebody and give to the little boy something that I don't have? How do I do that? I'm 58 years old and still nobody to the day has thought it was necessary to sit down and talk to me and tell me who my dad is. And as you wondering why I'm getting into difficulties in relationship, you wondering why I got trust issues. You know, I turned like 54, and I have an organization, and the organization was delivering some stress to me, and I started having some issues with erectile dysfunction, me and my wife, we went to therapy, and the therapist, I'm talking about the little boy listening versus the grown man listening, and we in therapy, and the therapist is telling me and my wife, she's saying stuff like, listen to me, I don't know about you, but this stuff had to take time to sink into me. She said, you do know that erection, intercourse, and ejaculation ain't the goal for intimacy. You do know that, right? You do know there's times where you could just sit down and glaze into her eyes and you two begin to have a soul connection and conversation. And the grown man is sitting in the therapy saying, man, all that sound good. And I understand every bit. And then the therapist give us an assignment to go home and do an exercise. And when I get home to do the exercise, every time the exercise came up, my wife would have to corner me to get me to do the exercise because I knew in my grown man mind what was right. But the little boy, he never had the capacity to connect on that level. And everything about him raising him up and going back and the step work helping me go get him. When I go get the little boy, the first few years clean, it was easy. And the reason why it was easy, James, because I spoiled the little boy. I just really just gave him anything he wanted. Like whatever he think that he want, I'm gonna give it to him. You know, I am a grown man. I got grown man money, so I definitely can spoil a little boy. And then a part of my process, the little boy became a little bit more. You ever see your grandkids or your kids grow up and they grow up and they growing up, but when they get into their teenage years, they got different needs. You can't just give them anything they want. They got this rebellion streak that come with them. And I'm trying to deal with the little boy, and the little boy got the rebellion streak, but I don't know how to get on my knees and hug him and nurture him and bring him out of the space. I don't know how to rescue him because nobody ever rescued me. I don't know how to sit with uncomfortable emotions and connect on another level because it never happened for me. I don't know if it happened for me, if it didn't happen for me. All I know is I'm uncomfortable with it. All I know is that whenever you ask me to put down expectations physically and get into and touch somebody emotionally, the little boy shows up. Now I don't know what little boy is sitting at the seat of your emotions, but I got a full juvenile delinquent. This little joker, he's capable of anything. I was at a meeting one day and I was sharing that the little boy was capable of anything. Somebody came to me after the meeting and they arguing with me, telling me that I'm not capable of anything. And I'm telling you, I'm saying, no, this little guy is capable of anything. If I let him run the show any day that I get up and miss this mark, this little dude will run the show. This dude ain't satisfied with nothing. You can give him a loving relationship, but he just don't know how to be satisfied. You can give him all the money in the world, but he don't wanna do what's responsible. He wanna go out and play. He wanna go out and live out fantasies. I'm telling you that the little boy is a vicious little boy. I'm telling you that I remember being arrested, and I was in the youth study center in Philadelphia. And back then, if you was 17 and you got arrested for anything that they considered adult, they would have this thing called certification. But you still would be in the juvenile institution, but they would take you to the adult court. And then when they would take you to the adult court, they would put you in a bubble right next to the sheriff's, a clear see-through bubble. You don't go back in the back with the cells with the grown people because they can't put you back there. But everybody that would get sentenced would come into the bubble with us so they could get monitored by the sheriff until another sheriff came to take them out. And I never forget that this guy from South Philly came into our cell, and he had 7.5 to 15. Now I'm 17 years old, and 7.5 to 15 really... When he came in there and said it, I was like, who processes 7.5 to 15 years? That just seemed crazy to me. And he sat down and he acted, listen to me, I'm telling you, I told you I had Snake, JD, and Earl Dix as role models. And when this dude came in the cell and sat down and took that 7.5 to 15 like it wasn't nothing, I looked at him, and this is what he did in the cell. If you was a same sex guy, they would have you in that little thing too. And I remember him doing something. He sat down. He told two of the other guys that was with us, sit in front of me, put your coat over your leg, and bend over so you could guard the guard, so the sheriffs can't see what's going on in there. And the guy received a sexual blowjob from another guy that was inside the cell with us. This blew my mind. And I knew I had to go back to the youth study center. And it wasn't going, you can't go back to the youth study center and sit down and tell these people that this blew my mind. I didn't have the space to go talk to some. Listen to me, if that happened to somebody today, their parents going to put them straight in therapy. They're going to get all of the attention that they need. But I'm talking about when this happened to you in the early 80s, it messed me up, but I had no safe space. So I took on the character of the dude who got the 7.5 to 15, and that is never let them see you sweat. Never let them see, never let them see what gets to you. I'm telling you that my mom's youngest brother, he was 10 years older than me, and he lived with me and my grandmother and my grandfather, and he was gay. And I'm not homophobic. This ain't no gay bashing. I understand that 2025, being gay in the 70s and being gay in 2025 is two different things. Today, you can go in the house and come back out whatever you want to be. And the society is more acceptable at, but in the 70s, wasn't like that. And my uncle was gay, and he was every friend that I had an older brother. I was the only one in the neighborhood that didn't have an older sibling. I had my uncle, and my uncle was gay, and in the 70s they didn't understand that. And so because they didn't understand it, kids are cruel. So they would take their misunderstanding out and abuse me and traumatize me because they didn't understand him. And they would say, you know, back then they just used to think that anybody was gay, mess with all boys, mess with kids, and they would come at me with that kind of stuff. And my uncle never messed with me. He never violated me. He tried to have a loving relationship with me, but because we were in an environment where nobody understood him, and the stigma was so bad that I caught the repercussion of the stigma of the life that he had to live that he didn't choose to live, I just couldn't have a relationship with him because I blamed him for the problems that I had to go through coming up in my neighborhood, being abused. And I'm talking about I ain't talking about physical abuse, I'm talking about verbal abuse. And this is why I had to grab Snake, Earl G, JD, and Earl Dix, because the way that made me feel, something inside of me said, nobody is going to ever make me feel like that again. And I turned into something, not because I wanted to be that, but because life had dealt me such a blow, and life had dealt me such circumstances that I could not tolerate, I could not deal with, so I decided that nobody was ever going to hurt me. I told you when I first started talking that I don't know why they asked me to do men's rap, because this ain't really about men issues. This is about a man trying to nurture a little boy and trying to bring myself up to the speed. And I'm telling you that the little boy that I'm nurturing, when I first got clean, he seemed like he was 4 years old. And today he's not 4 years old, but he ain't 58 years old either. And so, in other words, what he still got me during the dilemma that I'm still in is that I'm 58 years old, but I don't make decisions like a 58-year-old. I'm 58 years old, and I'm still making 35-year-old decisions. I'm still moving in my emotions like I'm 35, but I'm 58. And so that causes problems in your life when people in your life have an they expect you to be one way, and you just refuse. And they don't understand, because they're not in this program, they don't understand that I never seen the outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. And I'm just getting into milestones in my life. And the milestones in my life, I'm so proud of every bit of progress that the God of my understanding has allowed me to experience. I have a 6-month-year, or my granddaughter, she's 6 months. It's my baby boy, my junior, Martin Roger Boyd Jr. is my baby boy son. I mean daughter. He don't have no kids. And all my daughters, all I got is grandsons. And 6 months ago, he had a baby, and he had a baby girl. And I took the commitment. I don't even know why I took the commitment. But he asked me, he said, "Dad, you think you can watch her on Mondays?" And I'm thinking that he was saying, "Can you watch her on Mondays?" I'm thinking it's some temporary kind of situation, like watch her on Mondays until we get child care because the baby mom get ready to go back to work. But he meant watch her on Mondays. I start watching my 2.5-month-old grandbaby on Mondays. Listen, man, you're looking at a dude that's 58 years old that watches 2.5, that started watching the 2.5-month-old grandbaby. That means that all of my business, all the meetings, all commitments, all that stops on Mondays. Now, I didn't know it was going to stop on Mondays, but I'm telling you that on Mondays, you know what you're going to catch me doing? And she don't drink formula. She drink, her mom breastfeed her, so she pumps the milk. And then when I get the baby on Sunday night or I get the baby on Monday, I get the baby, I got a diaper bag. I got a cooler full of frozen breast milk. I got a diaper bag with Pampers and wipes and new bibs and pacifiers. I got a stroller that you hit one button that turned into a car seat. I don't know about you, this stuff is big to me. I told you I never learned how to outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. But if you catch me on Monday, and it's been since she's been 2.5 months old, she'd be six months on the 28th of this month. Listen, she just started eating baby food maybe 2 months ago. And now I feed her the baby food. I'm talking about I changed Pampers to complete blowouts. Sometimes I'll change the pamper and that thing, listen to me, and I love her so much, I love her through whatever she put me through. Everything that she do, if I don't care what she do, when I say that's pop pop baby, and that little baby put a smile on her face, she can do whatever she want to do. And she doesn't understand that the reason her grandfather can show up for her like this, because he's trying to get into a position where he outgrows the self-centeredness of a child, because he belongs to a fellowship in a group of men that refuses to let him stay a juvenile delinquent, or let the juvenile delinquent stay in charge of his emotions. I'm telling you that the greatest thing that I do, I went to Jamaica in the beginning of January. I went to Jamaica, and that was the first Monday that I wasn't home, and I wasn't able to watch her. And I woke up Monday in Jamaica missing the baby. And because I woke up in Jamaica missing the baby, I said, I told my wife, was like, "Come on, just lock in with me, and like let's just have this moment." But I missed the baby so much that I found me a little space, and I FaceTimed the baby. And I had to FaceTime the baby to watch the baby. See, you don't understand what's going on with me. You don't understand that I'm outgrowing the self-centeredness of a child. You don't understand that the old Martin could never make a commitment to anybody or anything outside of himself. And so to have somebody depend on me and to have somebody I'm talking about love. I don't know if she loved loved her papa the way I love her, but I'm talking about she makes life stand still and she makes living worth it. And I didn't notice when I started watching her 2.5 months. I called my son one day, and really, here's the truth. The exact nature is, when I called him one day, and I was like, where the baby? And he said, the baby, other grandmom on the mom's side, the baby spent the night over their house, and she had the baby. And really, I was jealous. No, I'm talking about the exact nature. Really, really, I was jealous. So I said, man, she ain't the only one. Cause, you know, I was like, well, damn, they letting people watch. You know, y'all letting people watch the baby overnight already? Somebody else can get the baby? I said, man, I'll get the baby too. My son called me. He said, Dad. He said, you think you can get the baby on Monday? So immediately my mind started running and I was saying to myself, how am I gonna fix my schedule? I got businesses, properties, programs. I said, but for some reason, I told y'all because I was jealous. But for some reason I said, yeah, I'll get the baby. Now I didn't know that I was gonna fall in love with my granddaughter on another level. And I didn't know that God was gonna use that. My jealousy to make a statement that would take me to a place that would introduce me to a level of maturity that I thought was impossible for me. And everybody that's around me, all of my friends and my sponsee family, and people know they don't even call me on Mondays no more. I had one commitment on a Monday that I was able to do. And I tell people now that if you call me on Monday and you need me to do a commitment, what I'm going to have to do is find adequate child care. And I don't do it in the daytime because the daytime is, listen to me, I'm telling you that every Monday we sit there, she eat, she laugh, she go to the bathroom, she get her clothes changed, we look at Miss Rachel.
That's right.
So, no, you know, I got my own TV shows I want to look at. And I'm sitting there, and she right next to me, and she just whatever I want to do, she'll do. So if I want to put my TV show on, she'll watch it. But the responsible thing is, put Miss Rachel on. Why? Because the TV shows you want to look at, they ain't gonna be teaching her nothing, they ain't gonna be giving her nothing. And so I can't even believe it. And here's another part that I don't believe about her. That my wife don't help me. Now my wife, she's a counselor in the Philadelphia school district, and she's in school. She's back in school getting another master's degree, and she had her own private practice. She's a therapist. But in my mind, I'm talking about when I first started doing it. In my mind, I was like, well, soon as she get off work, she spent the night here. When she get off work, I'm going to get me some assistance. It's going to be an alley hoop. She's gonna, I'm going to sub her in. Man, my wife would get off work. And she get off work and she come in. And she kiss the baby. Say, how you doing? And then she'd be like, I'm going to my office. At first, listen to me. You know, when I tell y'all the type of anger I had, I used to, this was my disease, this was the little boy was saying to me, what kind of BS is this? She know damn well she's supposed to, listen to me, because sometimes my granddaughter don't even let me get dressed. So I got to do all of that stuff before she even comes. I gotta have anything that I'm gonna put on. And then my home group meets on Monday night. And her other grandmom lived one block away from my home group. And every Monday, I drop her off at 7 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock. My home group is at Lompkin Pike, Ogas and Lompkin Pike. She lived on the corner of Ogas and Lompkin Pike, and her home group is on Lompkin Pike and Church. And I drop her off and my wife knows that I drop her off at the other grandmom house and go to my home group and then leave my home group and go pick her back up and then I take her back home. And all, I'm talking about the little boy, he's saying, she know damn well I gotta take the baby over there to these people's house. Don't you know how this look? And the mature me, rationally with the immature me, gotta give my wife the grace and the space she needs. My wife worked all day, and she counseled third graders. Come home, gotta go to class on Mondays, got a whole college curriculum she got to carry. Then plus got her own private practice where she see clients on Monday. The self-centeredness of a child says, but I want you to help me. I want you to stop what you're doing. It ain't her assignment, it's mine. But I'm so used to other people. I'm just getting used to this ideal of being sufficient, trusting the God of my understanding to help me do the assignment that he gave me. This is really an 11-step assignment. This assignment says you're going to pray for the knowledge of God's will for your life, and then he's going to tell you. And I don't know about you, but everything God tells me to do, I got to go back to him and say, you got to be joking. So definitely, if this you telling me to do that, then I'm going to need your power to do that. And what I realized about the situation with my grandbaby is that the will of God for my life in this season, the knowledge of God, is that I be there for my granddaughter the way I wasn't there for my daughter. The will of God for my life is that I be committed on another level to an innocent person that's in the planet. The will of God because I told you my son act like it was one time. He just said, this how he got me. He called me up, he said, hey Dad, what's your schedule tomorrow? So I was like, I'm over, I got a few things. What's up? He said, I want to know, can you watch the baby tomorrow? Now I don't know that tomorrow means every Monday. So I said, yeah, I can handle that. Then he says, you think you can come pick her up on Sunday? I told y'all, I'm thinking this is a one-shot deal. So I was like, I got that in me. I'm gonna get myself together. I'm gonna go get the baby, and I'm gonna go lock this thing in. And I go over there 4.5 months ago. Listen to me, and my son still don't have conversations with me about when it's supposed to stop. And my daughter told me, I was talking to my oldest daughter the other day, and she said, Dad, you do know that they never planning on putting a baby in daycare. Here's the maturity. Yeah. I don't care if they never planning on putting a baby in daycare. I want my Mondays. You talking about a person that seemed to never outgrow the self-centeredness of a child, now having a responsibility to take care of a child. When my daughter was telling me, I was saying, this is what my mom was saying. I was saying, well, they can get her a daycare, but it don't got to be for all 5 days. I like this Monday thing. I like the fact that I rest on Monday. I like the fact that my whole life slows down. I like the fact that I gotta, this is my road dog, man. Listen to me. You're not understanding me. Every person that I run into, I got my phone got Monday moments. And people are like, let me see the baby. And when I go to my phone and get the pictures, this is not something you wanna ask me to do. Because I go on and on and on and on. And I'm proud of the fact that I can be something that I never thought I could be. My grandsons, James, when you called me for this commitment, it was so long ago. I don't know when you called me. Listen to me. She was born in August. You might have called me in June. And so I really thought I missed the commitment. You know how you hear so many conventions, convention here, and I'll be traveling all around. I was like, well, damn, maybe I just missed the commitment. And then I made a commitment this Saturday to hang out with my grandsons. And then you called me this week and reminded me that the commitment was, and I called them. I talked about responsible. Called them, and I said, I know I was supposed to pick y'all up at 2:30, 3 o'clock. But I'm going to be, I gotta be out of town. I got something to do, so I'll be back later. I'm going to get y'all like 5. These are men's raps. These are little boy raps. This is about how do you really grow up? What happens in my life? What did this fellowship give me that I can show up for life with some integrity and some dignity? And I'm so happy. Listen, when I leave here, my wife, when I leave here, the way I'm going to drive down the expressway, down 95 back home to make sure that I'm there in time to hang out with my grandkids, I'll blow your mind. But all of this, none of this stuff happens without the program. None of this stuff happens without the steps. Now, I'm not telling you that you have to do the steps. I'm telling you what the literature says about the steps. The literature says that the steps are the best guarantee towards relapse. You want a guarantee? That's the best guarantee. They not only the best guarantee to cause you not to relapse, they also are the perfect guarantee to cause you to grow up. And when I first got clean, my sponsor introduced me to the steps, and he said it to me like this. He said, listen, this ain't no 3-step program. He said, it's a 12-step program. He said, the first 3, 1, 2, and 3, I can't, God can, I think I'm going to let them, they the give up steps. The second 3, 4, 5, and 6, they the grow up steps. The next set of 3, 7, 8, and 9, they the make-up steps. The fourth set of 3, 10, 11, and 12, they the keep-up steps. And I'm telling you that in order for me to be in the space that I'm in with reconciliation, doing something for my spirit, doing something for my mind, doing something for my emotions, doing something for my family, doing something that I never thought I could do, is a result of the steps. And I like how he also told me, he said, and before you start bringing other people into your recovery process, meaning amends, you better make sure you gave up and make sure you grew up. Because you can't make an amends if you don't give up or grow up. Because if they reject your amends, then they rejecting the amends, but the juvenile is going to receive the rejection. And because the juvenile has tantrums, he might do anything. What am I trying to communicate today? I'm trying to communicate that the program has revolutionized my life. That the program has caused me to be in a space where I can have a spiritual awakening. The program has given me tools to live beyond my wildest dreams. The program has shown me why in early recovery and even today why relationships didn't work. The program told me to stop blaming everybody else and look at me. The program told me that the little boy is the one that ran my life. The program said that you got to address the little boy so he can stop running your life. The program said to me that you can live beyond your wildest dreams. The program said to me that you don't only have to stay clean from drugs. You can. One of these convention badges is one down there. It says a higher height and change leads to growth. But I'm telling you that the program of Narcotics Anonymous is the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm telling all my friends and my brothers with that shirt say, hug me. They call it, you know, they call serenity keepers. I'm telling you that you have embarked on the most purest, beautifulest, gift that God ever gave to humanity. When he looked down and he seen what the disease of addiction and what drug use was doing to us, he gave us a fellowship. And when you get to the fellowship, a loving hug means everything. And I know sometimes you get us, we come in here and we be going through stuff, and in our minds we look like we don't even want a hug. But those are the times to hug us. Before I sit down, I'm looking at the thing, it's 1:45. I want to say this before I don't want to miss this. And I want to ask us, let's put our hands together and thank the committee who organized this convention. And I want to say to you that when a committee gets together, especially a convention committee, they get together to put an event on. Who really gets together is grown people with little kids sitting at the seat of their emotions. The hardest thing to do, because we come to the convention, everything is set up, the hotel is set up, your room is set up, the slots are set up, the speakers are set up, the routine is set up, the banquet is set up, everything is set up. But if you knew what went into putting this convention together, if you had any clue of what it was like to sit in a room with a bunch of people that got spirits that's like children and acting up, if you knew what it was to sit in a room and say something that somebody didn't agree with, if you knew what it was like to have a group conscience and have a group conscience with a person without a step one, if you knew what it was like to sit down and go through the painful process of not getting what you want, then you would have a greater appreciation for what we're experiencing here. It took a lot for this convention to form and come together. And to James, to the Northeast Convention Committee, I just want to say thank you. Because conventions, anytime addicts get together, the second tradition comes to my mind. And the second tradition says that the nature of who's in charge of the second tradition is God. And in Narcotics Anonymous, we should be concerned with protecting ourselves from ourselves. And here's my favorite line in it. And not one of us is capable. That means if you got 35, 40, 50, 60, 70 years clean, you the one of us. If you just got here, you the one of us. Not one of us is capable on a consistent basis of making right decisions. Not one of us. The 10th step goes on, and I'm just talking about what it takes to be on a convention committee. The 10th step is a maintenance step. It's where you're supposed to check yourself. And Edward Town Wise says this about the ability, how hard it is to check yourself. It says the problem with knowing when we're wrong is we usually approach every situation planning on being right. That's the problem. When I approach it, I plan on being right. And then it says, take for instance, you get into a service disagreement or argument. You go study all sides of the issue. You come back swearing to God that you know what the group should do or the committee should do. And you get so busy forcefully trying to prove your rightness that you fail to recognize your self-righteousness because you respect your opinion more than you happen to respect the opinions of others. That is the environment that exists inside of a subcommittee that's tasked with a job from the groups in the area to put on a convention. So anytime I come to a convention and I see, you got to be in service to know that there was something went on before this, yes, to cause us to experience this. And I don't want to let the juvenile delinquent rob me of the opportunity to just say thank you to the subcommittee that put this convention on. My name is Martin. Thanks for letting me share. Take these steps down and not jump.